Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I'm always at a loss to...
We don't need to say anything further after that.
We
have established our credentials and who we are, and that is enough.
Yeah, I guess so. And it's the fact that we have an exciting episode.
Yes, very exciting. And now we're going to sit silently for the next 2 hours.
I don't think so. No, I think I would get really bored.
Well, exciting for someone, I suppose.
Well, if today is September 7th, that seems like it ought to be something special about being September 7th. Anyway, if today is 9/7/13, if today is September 7th, 2013, where you are, you're welcome to give us a call in here, 773-1400 locally or
1-866-597-1400 locally or anywhere else, for that matter.
Within the sound of your voice.
Yes, and yours as well.
And mine as well?
Yes.
That's very nice to know that. And we do need to disclose the fact that the Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of a radio program, which you probably could have deduced from the fact that you're listening to a radio program and we called it that. See, our listeners are really brilliant. The other thing it is an SEC-registered investment advisory fee-only type investment advisory money management kind of place.
Mm-hmm.
In Salado, Texas, of all places. And they're both the same name, and we work in there, and we do this, so there's definitely a correlation there.
I liked your scientific explanation, as the and there and them and yes.
Well, that's what you have to do if you're really smart. So you say and there and them a lot.
Yeah, and 110%.
Yeah, well, you don't say like. It's like a police in Salado, like...
You can say but not like.
Right.
Okay. I'll just have to remember that.
That's how you can tell if somebody's really intelligent. They say a lot, and people who aren't really, really intelligent say like a lot. So, telephone lines are not lighting up.
Well, we're obviously not exciting to most of the people out there.
Yeah, well, I can understand that completely. Well, the Dow Jones Industrial Average... The Standard & Poor's 500 Stock Index and the NASDAQ responded to Jeff and Jake McClure's return from vacation by rising.
Yes, they knew we were back, and either that or everybody else was coming back from vacation at the same time and decided to buy.
And apparently, based on some of the responses we've been getting lately, it wasn't widely noted by many investors that the Dow actually was much higher at the end of July than it is now. Actually, it was higher in May than it is now.
Yes.
So, because a lot of people seem to think, as a matter of fact, I got some calls last week that indicated, you know, the market's gone up so much in the past couple of months. Why hasn't my portfolio gone up? And I said, well, maybe because the market hasn't gone up in the last couple of months. It's actually gone down. Well, it's not what I'm hearing.
Well, take a look at the statistics.
Well, yeah. And so it's kind of a good thing that that we're back. One of the reasons that we go away at the end of July and the beginning of September is because the market generally goes down whether we go away or not. And so we can blame it on us if we're gone. See, it's our absence from the airwaves.
It's really interesting. I was going over my notes from the last program we did 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
Because we skipped 2 weeks.
Your math is really
pretty
good.
It's, yeah. It's that extra week in there that throws people off sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I realized that not much has changed. same economic numbers.
I'm looking at the news stories. Did I get stuck here? Maybe I'm looking at the wrong. I pulled up the file.
I'm hitting refresh on the web page. Is this the right? Yeah. Yep. Nothing's changed.
I actually pulled up the folder where I keep all the news articles, and from 3 weeks ago, and then I pulled up the ones that I'd compiled for this program, and you could easily get them mixed up. So
yeah. So
the Fed may taper.
Right.
Bond buying.
President is
considering
Syria. President is considering Summers or Yellen for Fed chairman. It's exactly that. Nobody's making any decisions in Washington. That's kind of helpful.
It's really still August.
Yes, even though it's September, it feels like August.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's an interesting little, I love little factoid numbers that are really weird. The 52-week, which is 1 year for those of you who are weekly challenged, the 52-week increase in the Dow Jones Industrial Average is 12.14%. Okay?
The 52-week return. So yep. 1 year ago,
it was 12.14%.
Lower than it is now.
Including dividends and all that. And but year to date, it's up 13.88%. So in the last 9 months, it's up about 14%, but in the last 12 months, it's only up 12.14%. Now, you sit and think about that. So the further back in time you go, the less gain there is.
Well, to a point.
Actually, there's a lot of truth in that. When you consider that, probably in right around 2000, there was a time you could have plugged into the Dow Jones Industrial Average just the numerical return during that time, and you come forward to today, it looks like you may have just a little bit of a gain.
Yeah, there's dividends
until,
and things that
until
pay
you,
in
but
capital
until
gains.
until you figure a couple of minor things like taxes,
yeah,
and inflation, and then you figure out that had you invested about this time in the year 2000. You would have a negative gain. So it's true. I mean, if we have a 12-month gain of about 12%, the further back in time, the lower your gain gets. So if you could extend that, you know, people do projections and they say,
yeah,
well, the market
work.
Is doing this and this, and so we're going to project it out to there. It's really very simple. The longer you invest, the less money you make until finally, for really, really, really long-term investors, they lose all their money.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is very much like the statistics book that I had growing up. I've mentioned this before. It's a great statistician's book from the 1970s, and it said at the current rate of growth in Elvis impersonators, by this time in 1992, the entire world will be Elvis impersonators.
We are.
I think everybody can do an Elvis impression.
I think everybody is now. So that's the problem. We just don't realize that everybody is impersonating Elvis right now.
Yes.
Makes sense. Anyway.
So anytime we do a projection, there are issues there.
Well, so that's the news for today. The market went up. As a matter of fact, one of the commentators about the market said the market went like somebody going from New York City to Newark by the way of Miami.
Which makes no sense to me.
Right, exactly. So that is exactly the way it worked out.
I like it when the news media is stuck with analogies because nothing makes sense. So they just throw one in there that doesn't
like
make sense
going
either.
Going from New York to Newark by the way of which is probably the most efficient way to fly there.
Okay, a train leaves the station in Newark, and another train leaves the station in New York at the same time.
As one leaves from Miami.
Right.
Got it.
Yeah, I'm just quoting a schedule. There's not a math problem here.
I was watching West Wing last night. There's an episode on there about the president flying from Tokyo to Washington, D.C., and he lands an hour before he takes off. And then you were saying that when you were in...
Yeah, when I traveled in Asia, the same thing happened. I was still in Japan when I got home.
Yeah,
according to my watch.
And I think you still are.
So. I might still be, yeah.
Anyway, so what's going on in the big wide world? Well, we had a jobs report.
Yep, I was going to talk about that, too.
I think that people don't know that Steve is dead, so they keep talking about this jobs report.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting jobs report. You want to talk about it first, and I'll talk about it second? Or you
well, there's
to?
Only two sides to it, so it's really
no,
easy to talk
more,
about.
There's more than two sides to any report.
Well, I will make it the most simplified two sides.
Okay.
The unemployment rate, which is this is the thing when people call houses and they say, is everyone in the house employed that's trying to find work? And they say yes or no. And they don't use cell phones in this survey. They just call houses with landline phones. Anyway, I've got other problems
Actually,
with
they
that
hold,
whole concept.
They call households, but yeah.
Yes, and they say, does everybody have a job that wants a job in this house? And so the unemployment rate there dropped to 7.3% from 7.4%.
Right.
Now, the other side of things is the Labor Department also measures the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Who out there is in the workforce? So our unemployment dropped to 7.3%.
Right.
We added 169,000 jobs.
Yay.
I like how it's always a round number, the numbers that we add.
Well, there,
like
people are
people
hired.
Don't hire in,
people are hired in groups of thousands.
Yes,
did you know that?
We're hiring a block of 1,000. Tell the Labor Department immediately.
Right.
So, $169,000, which is
not dollars.
Not dollars. Jobs. Jobs. Okay. If they all had.
And those are all Steve Jobs impersonators.
Right. Well, you can tell we're having a good time. Most people listening are probably thinking, "What are they trying to say?" Okay. So
know.
We got 169,000 jobs added.
Right.
There's a problem with that.
But they took away 75,000 jobs.
Yes, there's a problem with that, and that is that
the workforce participation dropped.
Right. Workforce participation dropped by 312,000. So
right.
If we added 169,000 while 312,000 left, trying to do the math there, how
I
is
think
the
that has something
rate?
To do with the train that left Miami at
right.
the same time that the one that left Newark left New York.
Right. What this is saying, and this is an easy statement, is the unemployment rate is not better. It may look like it is.
Oh, I think so.
The people that are employed are more fully employed than they used to be.
Yes.
But that's because those that weren't fully employed stopped working at all.
Well, I was reading some deeper statistics about that, and you have to be a geeker person to read deeper statistics.
Right.
But I read deeper statistics, and I kind of liked what I saw. The main reason for the workforce decrease falls into two areas. Number one, there's people about my age who legally could be drawing Social Security who decided to do so.
Right.
Which is pretty well.
Yeah, that's what
we expected.
The baby boom is ready to retire.
But there's another couple of statistics as I was digging around through the statistics, which shows you
really
just what a total geek that I am. Okay?
I've got a really good one for you, if you miss it.
And that is that the fall off in workforce participation, other than from older people,
uh-huh.
is from women.
Well, there's another one, too.
What's that?
This is one that's a zinger, and it's a good one just for a laugh. So, because the repercussions of this are amazing.
Okay.
The porn industry.
The porn industry?
The porn industry in California.
Yes.
There's an outbreak, a small outbreak of HIV. They put everything on hold. So you're talking about tens of thousands of jobs that just stopped for a moment. Just
tell everybody
that was,
can get an HIV test.
Yes, I just find that
okay.
quite humorous that,
well, that
there are that many people employed in porn.
This is just an area that I don't experience. Don't want to go there. Well, it sort of relates to what you just said. There's another issue that is coinciding with the decline in the growth of women's participation in the workforce. And you know, notice I didn't say a decline in the number of women participating in the workforce. It's just that it's the percentage of women.
Boy, you just confused me, and I'm...
Well, the bottom line to it is that women from about 1978 forward
mm-hmm.
rapidly increased. There was a rapid increase in the number of women participating in the workforce, but it actually started before that, but it really kicked off in 1978.
Right.
And not coincidentally, the workforce participation rate is the lowest it's been now since 1978. Now, when we look at this, there's another number that is, to me, just as important, and that is the fact that we have had a birth dearth.
Yep.
The baby bust, it's called,
mm-hmm.
And it has bottomed and leveled off, and we're starting to get an increase in birth rate in the United States
from the women
who are not working.
They left the workforce to have a baby.
That's it. And
we see a birth rate increase. It's funny when you combine demographics with the Labor Department and you realize that the Labor Department should be covering another kind of labor.
Right, yes. Well, it's an interesting thing to me and a critical thing, because when we talk about long term, it's critical that we collectively in the United States have a growing population. It doesn't have to grow very fast, but it does have to grow, because once the population stops growing, it starts getting older. And as it gets older, that can be expensive and bankrupting, which is going on already in Europe and in China.
And Japan.
And in other places. As a matter of fact, all the developing countries, all the developed countries in the world, with the exception of the United States, are shrinking.
And I would say, well, it depends on what you call developed countries, because Eastern Europe, some of them would be considered developed, but their population is growing as well.
Mm-hmm. But not very fast. That's the problem.
Maybe
that's true. I don't know.
The Czech Republic, Hungary, those areas are growing very quickly.
Okay.
You go a little bit further east of there, and they are shrinking at a drastic rate.
Well, the point I wanted to make, when I talk about developed economies, I'm talking about the euro. The European Union is an economy. In
yes.
Fact, the eurozone particularly. Yeah. Anyway, to get back to this, so what we've got is an increase in birth rate, but it's interesting where it's happening. It's between 30 and 44.
Yep.
In another aspect of it, the teen birth rate is dropping dramatically.
Can you birth a teen?
The percentage of teenagers having babies is dropping.
That would save some money if you could birth them and they're just teens right away.
No, that wouldn't do at all. But the point is that these are all very, very positive developments. They're very long term, obviously, but when we counsel investors and we manage money, we do so for the long term. But those are very, very positive developments. Another thing in the workforce, in the jobs data that came out. First off, the economists expected about 175,000 new jobs. We got 169,000. That's within the margin of error. There should be no disappointment there. We need about 144,000 new jobs to break even, so we're actually gaining on the deal, so the unemployment rate coming down shouldn't be too shocking. Here's the key, though. If you turn around and look at the adjustments for the previous several months that the Labor Department made in number of employees, or number of jobs added, they're all downward, and that could be kind of disappointing until you look and see where the adjustments came from. The adjustments were almost exclusively government jobs.
Yep.
In other words, what they said was, we lost, in the last couple of months, about 75,000 government jobs. About 75,000 government employees are no longer working for the government.
That's federal, state, and local.
We're getting shrinking government.
That's the Tea Party's goal.
And
I tend to concur. I think we had a government that was too large.
We're certainly dealing with it rather aggressively.
Yes, we are. And I'm not sure this is the best approach to it.
That's total government, about 40-some thousand of that. I don't remember the exact number, 42,000 were federal employees that are no longer working for the federal government. And I was trying to do a little research on that. Apparently, even as the federal government has started furloughing, and will furlough at least through the end of this month, but it looks like it'll go on, one day a week, a lot of federal workers are, whether they like it or not, are not working one day a week, and they've taken 20% pay cut, which, by the way, tends to raise the number of people who are working part-time, because
yes,
they're technically
does.
Now working part-time, and we'd like to work full-time.
That's one of the other issues here, to make the statistics a little bit more unclear. It's really hard for the Labor Department to count the number of people that have multiple jobs. You'd think that would be an easy thing, but when they talk about new temporary employment or part-time employment, it's very difficult for them to tell if this is somebody that's full-time employed elsewhere that has a temporary or part-time job to help make ends meet.
Mm-hmm. Well, these geeky numbers, as you drill through them, apparently the government has also offered quite a number of people an opportunity to retire early.
Yep.
And they are. And this is where the decrease in government jobs is primarily coming from. As they retire, they're not being replaced. And a lot of them are concerned that there's going to be a reduction in force next year in federal workers. So it's really all rotating around to the fact that the government is shrinking. The private sector is still hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And when you if you figure it all in there, if it wasn't for the government shrinkage, the instead of 169,000 jobs, there would have been over 210,000 new jobs added.
Somewhere
net.
230, 240.
Yeah. So what we've got is a private economy in the United States that's growing. Now, admittedly, we're true geeks because I'm going to tell you there's even more detail.
Yes, as
this.
If that would see we started with the simple, the two-sided. Well, here's the household survey and here's the Labor Department's other mm-hmm. side of this, but the reality is much more complex. When we're looking at a changing society, our age range, the birth rate.
But there's another aspect of
government
this,
shrinking,
which really does indicate we're still in deflation. As people lose their jobs, obviously the vast majority of them turn around and get new jobs.
Yep.
However, all of the numbers indicate that when they get a new job, it is a lower paying job than the one they left.
Yeah. The average pay is now lower by several thousand dollars a year than it was in 2007. Our economy by the books has recovered since then. Our GDP is above what it was back then. However, the average pay is down. People go, well, that's obviously a really bad sign. People are getting paid less. If you calculate for deflation, they're getting paid about the same.
And the difficulty with all this, of course, is we're not getting a rapid recovery in the economy. One of the reasons we're not getting a rapid recovery in the economy is the main driver in the United States economy is consumer spending. And when the average wage goes down,
consumer spending, for some reason, goes down with it.
Well,
it's a really strange.
It hasn't always, but when you combine,
and credit cards are not being very easily
right.
acquired.
Well, people are paying off their credit cards too, and people are paying still. The numbers are still out there that the average household is still paying down its rotating debt. Now, rotating debt, which I thought is an interesting thing, is the things
it's
like
very dizzy,
credit card,
very dizzy stuff.
We are increasing our fixed debt, finally. That is things like buying new cars. In other words, when you borrow the money to buy a car, you can't turn around and charge on that same card.
No,
so
it's not a
rotating.
Line of credit.
So what we're seeing in the United States is pretty much what we predicted, which is we're continuing to pay down our debt. We are, as Americans, beginning to buy new large-ticket things like automobiles. Automobiles, by the way, are one of the main drivers in the economy right now, kind of surprisingly, to some people. And
to stop just a moment there.
Yes.
The average cost of a new automobile is at the highest level it's ever been right now.
That's good.
Yes, it's good. And people go, well, why is that good? Because the cost isn't coming from the basic package. Basic package cost of an automobile is nowhere near all-time record highs. It's way below. But when you add in leather seats and you add in electronic thises and navigation systems and surround sound speakers and all that good stuff, that's what's happening. The average price is at all-time record high, and the reason is because interest rates are at all-time record lows. So people can afford all the bells and whistles and keep the same payment.
I looked on my car. I didn't find a single bell or whistle.
Well, I have a horn. Does that count?
No, that's not a bell or a whistle.
I think we should put bells and whistles.
Well, that's because I've got an old car.
That could be it.
See, if I had a newer car, I'm sure it would have bells and whistles.
Somewhere there should be bells. There's a chime.
Somebody said smoke and mirrors, too, but, you know, I can only find a couple. There's like three mirrors up in the front end of my car.
No smoke, though. Hopefully no smoke. When smoke is there, it's not a good sign.
Right, and Jake has advanced the electronics theorem.
Yes, this is all part of this. All of our electronics are driven by smoke.
Right.
It is extremely important to have smoke in your electronics, because as soon as the smoke starts coming out, it no longer works.
Yeah,
it
we've noticed that.
It just starts coming out.
We've actually
you
done,
have to keep
we've
it
done
inside.
A test on this, and And once you have a computer or any other electronic device and the smoke starts coming out of
it, they've lost all the power.
It stops working.
It was running on that smoke.
So we've concluded that smoke is what makes electronics work. We're still working with this. This requires more
foundational research theory. Yes.
And we've also discovered that if you feed it too much electricity, the smoke will come out. So the smoke is driven out by excess electricity.
So you have to keep the electricity at the right level, otherwise it scares the smoke out, and then the thing doesn't work anymore.
Right. And that's why lightning is dangerous. Anyway, so you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Lord, you can tell we've been on vacation. We're going to break for commercials, but if you'd like to give us a call on the other side, telephone numbers here in East Bell County, 773-1400.
Or anywhere else, it is 1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back after these. There's a whole bunch of commercials here from Town Square and KTEM. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400. Anywhere else?
Within the
sounds of our voices.
Yeah, you got to say within the sounds of our voices or it doesn't count. Anyway, so what else is going on in the big wide world?
Well, we're not getting any phone calls. That's one thing that's going on in the big wide world. Let's see here. I made some very, try to think of the right word for this, some extremist statements the last time we were on the air live. I said that this is a litmus test to see how the current president views his role when appointing the Federal Reserve chairman. And I said that if he appoints Summers, it's a statement about politics, and if he appoints Yellen, it's a statement about a healthy economy. And it sounds to me like the front runner in his vetting process is Summers, which I don't want to jump to any conclusions yet, but that is not a good thing. I think that Summers will have a lot of time getting approved. For those of you that don't have a clue what I'm talking about, let me step back. Ben Bernanke is retiring. He's not going to be reappointed as chairman of the Federal Reserve. And so, therefore, the president needs to appoint somebody, and the Senate needs to confirm them, and they needed to be set up and ready to go. There's already a lot of upset on Wall Street about the actions of the Fed, what's going to happen, a little bit of confusion leads to an unsteady market. Well, as I was saying before, there is a lady that is on the Fed board. You're trying to plug something in over there and making weird motions, which is...
I'm just having trouble with my computer this morning. So
doing a hammer.
Typical. Right.
Hammer it. Anyway, there's a lady that is the second in command, if you will, on the Federal Reserve Board named Yellen. And she is brilliant. She is pretty much as far away from politics as you can get, which is what you really need in a Federal Reserve chairman. And her competition for the slot is Larry Summers, who is a former Secretary of Treasury under Bill Clinton. He was the economics advisor to the president during the stimulus package in 2008. He helped write the Dodd-Frank bill. I see all of that as troublesome. If you're involved in writing legislation, no matter which legislation, this is a particularly partisan piece of legislation, but if you're involved in writing legislation, regulating the legislation should be left to someone else, because emotions get involved. And Dodd-Frank is the financial regulatory reform bill, and it gave a lot more power to the Federal Reserve. I see a lot of issues in handing off the chairmanship of a entity that just got given a whole bunch of powers by the person that gave it the powers. I see a problem with that. And do you want to try plugging in over here? I've got, here you go. We're dealing with a computer in here, and tell you what.
If you've got an extra place to plug in, that would be nice. Anyway, and that still may not work. I don't know. Anyway, the issue is, of course, that the Federal Reserve is the important player in the markets. Not maybe the only important player, but definitely an important player. And now you can't find a place to plug it in over there, right? Okay, don't worry about it. Let's stop worrying about the computer and just go on about our business. The Federal Reserve obviously regulates interest rates. And one of the things that's going on right now, and I think it's very important that the Federal Reserve be properly led. And I actually, you were saying that Larry Summers was the guy who seems to be the lead candidate for chairman of the Fed. But I don't know. I think I'm personally thinking that Yellen will be the one. I think we're paying entirely too much attention to this computer right now. Anyway, the point is that the Federal Reserve, one of the things that's concerning in the markets right now that a lot of people are worried about excessively. And I mean excessively because I don't think that there's any reality to the potential for it being that big of a thing. Is that the Federal Reserve at some point in the near future will begin tapering off its bond buying program. Now, apparently the folks that are in the markets and a lot of the market pundits are absolutely terrified that the Federal Reserve will taper off too quickly or will stop buying bonds or something like that. This is an interesting thing to me because I realize that $85 billion a month sounds like a lot of money. It's not. It is a lot of money in the sense of your money or my money or something like that. But the United States economy is approaching $17 trillion a year. And to give you some idea what that means, that's a trillion is $1,000 billion. So we're talking about if you were making $17,000 a year, if an $85 a month item in your economy was going to make a huge difference and cause you to go broke. You know, I just don't think, basically the United States, the government of the United States is making, I mean not the government, the economy of the United States is about $1,500 billion dollars a month. Roughly $1.5 trillion dollars per month is made in the United States economy. So if you're making $1,500 a month, an $85 difference is there, and it's real. But the point is, it's not money that's being made by anyone. Yes, it's money that's coming in, but it isn't that critical. And the other thing is, the suggestion by the Fed that tapering was going to go on, which apparently has panicked Wall Street a couple of times recently, their proposals, according to the speeches made by members of the Federal Reserve, is to perhaps reduce it in its meeting. I think it's September 14th they meet, is to perhaps reduce it from $85 billion to $70 billion. This, in other words, it's a $15 a month difference. If you're making $1,500 a month, there's a $15 a month difference coming up, and it just tells you we have a slow news period when people are freaked out by $15 out of $1,500.
Right. Well, this is the last part of that to kind of tie it in, because a lot of people really don't understand this portion of it. Where is that money coming from? You mentioned it's not being earned by anybody, but if we take that analogy of a person making $1,500 a month, and they have a savings account, and in their savings account is several thousand dollars. We'll call it even more than that. We'll call it, say, $10,000 in their savings account. They're making $1,500 a month, and to help make ends meet, they take $85 a month out of the $15,000 bank account. And they're just determining when to stop doing that. The Federal Reserve is exactly what the name implies. It is a group, that's federal, reserve. The reserve is like a savings account. That's what reserve means. It really is exactly that. It is a large bank account made by a lot of banks. They require that banks leave reserves on hand so that when you go to collect your money, it's actually in the bank. And they require that the banks pay the Federal Reserve over a long period of time to keep recouping back that bank account of this mythical person that's making the $1,500
anyway
a month.
I guess what it boils down to, and I've seen in today's real-time economics and some other places, dire warnings from obscure people that the market will drop 40% because the Federal Reserve will stop buying bonds. And frankly, that doesn't make any sense. I'm sure some people believe it, but there's always some people who believe that. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. I've got one more thing to add since we're talking about interest rates. Verizon's doing something a little bit weird, and people are saying this is silly, this is crazy. They're talking about releasing corporate bonds with a 100-year maturity.
Sounds like a winner to me.
People hear us say that and they think, are you insane? Do you just not like Verizon? What is going on here? They're going into debt for 100 years? Well, if you look back over the past 100 years, we have never had interest rates as low as they are right now. The likelihood of us having interest rates this low again is pretty low. It's not a high likelihood. If you're trying to get a loan, you might as well get it at the best interest rate possible and lock it in.
This is the thing that amazes me. First off, somebody buys a 100-year bond from Verizon.
Right.
Apparently, they will be able to sell them at a very relatively low interest rate. What are the chances that Verizon will still exist 100 years from now?
Pretty low.
That's just one of those things that I guess, but you know, that's right up there with the people who are buying long-term municipal bonds right now. And admittedly, we've been beating up on municipal bonds a long time, and
well,
a lot of people think we're silly. We have this. See, the thing about Jake and I, and this is Jeff speaking. We're long-term investors, and we counsel for long-term investing for a very, very good reason. Every study says the longer your time horizon as an investor, the more successful you're likely to be. So that means we tend to avoid and ignore short-term trends, even though we talk about them, we're aware of them. We look at them in light of what is the long-term issue. And we look at the fact that about something like two-thirds of municipalities in the United States, that ranges everything from local to state, have got obligations that over the long term they will be unable to fulfill. This indicates that buying a 30-year municipal bond might not be a really, really good idea at this point, even though they pay high interest rates right now. By the way,
the reason why they're paying high interest rates right now is because the likelihood of them paying the maturity value at some point is lower.
And the point is that this is one of the inescapable rules of finance. The higher the interest rate, relative interest rate being paid on a bond at any given moment, and I say relative interest rate meaning we compare, for example, the fact that the 10-year Treasury note is about 2.86% right now, and then you turn around and you can pick up 10-year municipal bonds with a yield to maturity that's up around 4% in some cases. Obviously, if you can get a tax-free 4% versus a taxable just under 3%, you would say, shoot, yes, let's go get the 4%. But there's a reason that tax-free 4% is higher than the 3%. It's higher because there's a greater risk. One of the inescapable rules of the marketplace is that when there's a greater risk associated with a bond's ultimate default, then the people who loan money to the municipality and the people that's, in essence, the people who buy the bonds are going to demand a higher interest rate to compensate them for the higher risk. So the higher the interest rate you get, the higher the risk. If you go to the bank right now and you get a certificate of deposit, the interest rate is near zero. Why? Because the risk of their of the default of that is
near zero.
And that's really what it boils down to. So basically, you can take the risk of default plus inflation, and that equals the interest rate on a bond.
Right.
So it's one of those things where, being the native cowards that we are, we approach this very, very cautiously. So it's one of those things to look at over a long period of time, is that when you make a quick decision to get involved in a long-term purchase, generally speaking, you are happy for a short period of time and unhappy for a long period of time.
I was just talking to my wife about this. We're looking around.
You were talking to your wife about this?
That's amazing. Yes, I know. We were looking at houses. We're looking at
doing a
move from our house to another house in the Austin area. And the Austin prices are really, really high.
Astronomical.
Very, very high.
Yes, it's called Austin astronomical house prices.
Yes. And so we're looking around at the different prices, and we want to find the house that we want to live in for at least 5 to 7 years. We want a longer, and I realize it seems like a short period of time, but in that environment, living in a house for more than that is kind of rare. So we're looking hard for the right house, and we keep finding pretty good houses. And it's shocking to me that when we say, nope, this isn't what we want, that the people, other people involved when we're talking are saying, well, you're not just, yeah, just look at all the things that it has that you wanted. Impulse buys for long-term purchases are the norm. People show up at a house and say, I like it, let's get it.
Yeah, I know, I did that.
And that is, it's a long-term, we're talking about a mortgage that lasts 15 to 30 years. And you're going to spend an hour thinking about going into it. You're going to, this is the one. You want to sleep on it, maybe 2 days, talking about a 30-year purchase. Well, I think you should take a little bit longer than that.
All depends on if you know what you're looking for.
If you know exactly what you're looking for and you come to the right place, it's not an impulse buy anymore. But if you show up and this just seems right, that's an impulse buy.
Well, we are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we do have some more commercials to play, and we only have about 7 minutes left in the hour, so we're going to play the more commercials, and I don't think there's anything that says more, but anyway, we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to give us a call on the other side, 773-1400 is the number in East Bell County, otherwise
1-866-597-1400.
We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We've got about 3 minutes left in the first hour of the Personal Wealth Coach on this, the 7th of September. That still sounds like it ought to be something special. The 7th of September, boom, of the year of our Lord, 2013. So if it is September 7th, and you'd like to give us a call, you're certainly welcome to do so. 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And I know why we're getting so few calls.
Why is that?
Well, because the Bureau of the Census reported that back in 15 years ago, the 98% of 96% of American households had telephones that was actually in the home. And today, it apparently in 2011, it has dropped to 71%. So you've had, like a 24% drop in the number of in-home telephones in the United States.
I want to know where during the 90s and into the 2000s were the houses that didn't have a telephone.
There obviously were some.
Maybe vacation homes?
I don't know. Somewhere
don't know.
They didn't
pretty
have them.
Small
the households means is not just the house itself. It's a family of people who didn't have a telephone. And as you were saying, in the surveys for employment and so on, this is undoubtedly having some degree of effect. Now, this is the interesting point, though. In 1998, 36% of the people had a cell phone. Guess what it is today?
It's 2013.
Guess what percentage?
I got that part right, yeah, at least.
89% of Americans today, 89% of adult Americans have cell phones. And we have a caller on 773-1400.
We've got less than a minute left, so hurry up.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, with large, giant companies like Enron and General Motors going out of business or going bankrupt, why should someone expect an insurance company to be around 35 or 40 years from now?
I got you.
Can
got me.
Tell me any kind of an annuity, any kind of annuity that would be worth gambling to put your money into an annuity?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yes, but it's we don't have time for it this hour. We'll talk about it
next hour. Okay.
Okay, that'd be
all right. Thank you very much, and thank you for calling. And this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we're about out of time for this hour. What do we have to say at the end? Do we have to say something
yes.
at the end?
If you would like to contact us off the air, you can reach us by email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. We have voicemail waiting at 947-1111 or 800-914-7526.
That sounds
you can go
good.
To our webpage, tpwc.com, and listen.
KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. The best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.